이리 바로 라우디
Online, we are broadcasting from Govardhan, the topmost abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and Srimati Radharani. So, what we're going to do, what we're going to do right now is read from the Nectar of Devotion. And I thought it'd be nice to have a Nectar Devotion class. Previously, we've been reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visits to Vrindavan. And now we're going to read about Nectar Devotion, starting with chapter 26. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshurum Yaditam Yena Tesmai Shigarve Namaha. So, just to give a little summary before we start reading, beginning with chapter 26, the topic is the bhavas, or emotions, devotees' emotions. And of course, right now, we also have something called bhava, it's called bhava rogue. Does anyone know what a bhava rogue is?
Sound
bad. That means sick emotions. Sick. Anyway, I won't mention it. Anyways, sick emotions in the material world. So anyway, so we're interested in spiritual emotions, and spiritual emotions come under different categories. One category, which we're going to read about first, is called vibhav. That means stimulation for ecstatic love. And anyway, we'll get into it in a second. And then there's anubhav, there's santrivav, astasaktivav, and astasakivav, astasattvikavav. And then finally there's Stayabhav. And I'll describe each one as we get to it. But today we're going to talk about Vibhav. And Vibhav is of two categories. Vibhav means that which stimulates ecstatic love. Two categories which are called Alambana and Udipana. Alambana means directly Krishna, Udipana means things related to Krishna. Anyway, we'll read about it. So, Chapter 26. Some things which give impetus or stimulation to ecstatic love of Krishna are called his transcendental qualities, his uncommon activities, his smiling features, his apparel, his garlands, his flute, his buffalo horn, his leg bells, his conch shell, his footprints, his places of pastime, such as Vrindavan, his favorite plant, which is Tulsi, got it, his devotee, and the periodical occasions for remembering him. One such occasion for remembrance is Ekadashi, which comes twice a month on the 11th day of the moon, both waning and waxing. On that day, all the devotees remain fasting through the night and continuously chant the glories of the Lord. It says all the devotees. I must not be a devotee, because I don't remain fasting throughout the whole night. Anyway. But Prabhupada sometimes, it's called hyperbole, where you sort of doing it. You know what hyperbole is? No. It's sort of like an exaggeration to make a point. So, of course, that's the highest standard, but actually, Prabhupada didn't do it. Which is interesting. Prabhupada actually had people concentrate on what? Preaching Krishna consciousness and doing practical service. There's all these different austerities that are recommended in the Vedic literatures. One of them is called Chaturmas, where you have all these really heavy physical austerities culminating in eating like a duck once a day. That means you put the food on the ground and you put your hands behind your back. You can only eat unspiced avishya, you know, like khichdi. Unspiced, unsalted, and you get to go down once. And you get to go down like a duck once. And as soon as you get up, that's it for the day. Pretty good. And another way of Chaturmash is like, for the men at least, not for the ladies, growing beards. And Prabhupada didn't appreciate that. So anyway, so our austerity is Krishna Nam Kirtan. So Prabhupada wanted to maximize preaching of Krishna consciousness. Like, I was just reading something. We're having this whole discussion on the internet about should women be gurus. And many devotees who, let's say, Western devotees who moved to India who are more fanatic than the people in India, which is interesting. They're coming up with all these quotes from the Ramanuja Sampradaya and this Sampradaya, how there shouldn't be women gurus. And actually, if you take all those quotes, then you would say that you shouldn't have ladies in the temple either. And in Prabhupada, there's an interesting quote from Prabhupada where Prabhupada said his godbrothers and everyone criticized him for him. But if, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said if he didn't do these things, then he would have remained in Vrindavan and it would have been useless. Mm. His whole, you know, mission had been useless. So Prabhupada had the principle of utility. Of course, utility is the principle. You know, purity is the forest, books are the basis, all these other nice things. And preaching is the essence. And so Prabhupada really judged what should be done and what should not be done, utilizing those four practices or principles. And so Prabhupada saw that a devotee stayed fasting all night long and chanting, which is kind of nice, then the next day they'd be, for all intents and purposes, useless. You know, and I've seen devotees do that. You know, they're just proud, they stay awake all night, and then the next day just snoring all day long. You know, there, as soon as the Ekadasi Purana came, that means the breaking of the Ekadasi, it was just like, that's it. Of course, if one is not doing anything else, just like Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he established that those devotees who are in the temple and not really doing too much service or going out and preaching, they should chant 64 rounds a day. That was the standard. But if you're doing something practical, Prabhupada at 60. Prabhupada himself just chanted 16 rounds. It's not the Prabhupada chanting 64 rounds a day. And Prabhupada on the Ekadasi, he would have the devotees eat, or not just eat, but he would have the devotees make opulent prasadam for him. I remember when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, Ekadasi was actually a more opulent day than normal. We had more opulent prasadam you know, everything like carrot halva, all those sweets. Carrot halva, which I don't touch anymore. And, you know, all these milk sweets and what else do you make? Garunga potatoes. Oh, yeah, tons of garunga potatoes.
Tons of ghee.
Tons of ghee. Because nowadays you can't cook with peanuts anymore because a lot of people have peanuts allergy. So that's a different thing. So we had peanuts and everything. So, therefore, Prabhupada was very practical as far as his austerities are concerned. But Ekadasi is a day that at least shouldn't read the news. That's one thing I fast from on Ekadasi. I don't read the news on Ekadasi. And I chant more, and usually on Ekadasi I chant 64 rounds a day unless I'm traveling and preaching. So, 64 rounds doesn't take that long. I usually have them done. It's interesting, when you're concentrated on chanting 64 rounds, and you know that's your goal today, you really put everything else aside. And I found I get them done usually by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's with eating breakfast and doing my deity service too. And going to the morning program and giving class. Because you just like, you know that's what you're supposed to do. And you don't, you avoid everything else. Anyway, so Ekadasi is a day that stimulates ecstatic love. And some devotees portray Ekadasi as an inauspicious day. And they wrote to Prabhupada, you know, they get into all these stories, which Prabhupada never told a story about the Papa Purusha or anything like that. Papa Purusha doesn't mean Father Purusha. It means a sinful person, Purusha. And so Prabhupada never really got into that. He just said when he was approached about Ekadasi, whether Ekadasi was inauspicious, Prabhupada said it's the most auspicious time. You get more benefit from chanting. So, anyway, we don't eat grains, we don't eat beans, and we concentrate more on the holy names of Krishna. As far as Krishna's transcendental qualities are concerned, they can be divided into three groups: qualities pertaining to his transcendental body, qualities pertaining to his transcendental speech, and qualities pertaining to his transcendental mind. Wow. Same thing as a sannyasi, body, mind, and mortis. Nice. That's how to remember it. Tridanda. Krishna's age, his transcendental bodily features, his beauty, and his mildness of qualities are pertaining to his body. There's no difference between Krishna and his body, and therefore the transcendental features pertaining to his body are the same as Krishna himself. But because these qualities stimulate the devotee's ecstatic love, they have been analyzed as separate causes of that love. To be attracted by the qualities of Krishna means to be attracted by Krishna himself, because there is no real distinction between Krishna and his qualities. Krishna's name is also Krishna. Krishna's fame is also Krishna. Krishna's entourage, that means the people who hang out with Krishna, is also Krishna. Krishna and everything related with Krishna, which gives stimulation to love of Krishna, are all Krishna. But for our understanding, these items can be considered separately. Does anyone know a story of when Radharani considered different aspects of Krishna separately?
When Narayan, when she met Narayan?
Oh. No. Krishna, we're just talking about Krishna.
She thought she was in love with three persons.
Yes, I didn't, really. You're reading all the Goswami's literatures. So Radharani, that's from the Vidagdha Madhava, actually. So, you guessed. Like, Radharani was thinking, I'm the most unchaste girl because I'm in love with three men. He said, she was thinking, I'm in love with the man called Krishna. I'm in love with the person who plays the flute. And I'm in love with that blackish boy over there. So she thought, very unchaste. So she was making distinction. But her distinction was basically okay. Krishna is the reservoir of all transcendental pleasure. Therefore, the impetus is to love Krishna, although seemingly different, are not actually distinct from Krishna himself. In the technical Sanskrit terms, such qualities as Krishna's name, fame, etc., are accepted both as reservoirs of and stimulation for love of Krishna. You understand what reservoirs are? They contain love of Krishna, and they are the stimulative of Krishna. Krishna's age is considered in three periods. From his appearance day to the end of the sixth year is called the Kumara. From the beginning of the sixth year up to the tenth year is called the Puganda. And from the tenth to the 16th year is called Kaishura. It's Kaishura. After the beginning of the 16th year, Krishna is called or youth. And this continues with no change. Here's an interesting thing. As far as Krishna's transcendental pastimes are concerned, they are mostly executed during the Kumara, Puganda, and Kaishora periods. His affectionate pastimes with his parents are executed during the Kumara age. His friendship with the coward boys is executed or exhibited during the Puganda period. And his friendship with the gopis is exhibited during the age of Kaishora. Krishna's pastimes are finished. Now here's something that some of the acharyas differ with. Krishna's pastimes at Vrindavan are finished by the end of his 15th year, and then he is transferred to Mathura and Dwarka, where all other pastimes are performed. Now, some of the acharyas say what? 12 Krishna went. But this is Prabhupada. So I accept what Prabhupada says. Anyway, I mean, in different times and different days of Lord Brahma, because Krishna appears once in every day of Lord Brahma, it could be 12. But Prabhupada is saying 16, so that's what I accept. And you may have an argument with someone about it.
16 or 15?
Well, when he reaches the end of the 15th year, he's 16. End of the 15th year is 16. That's what it usually is. In other words, he's, for all intents and purposes, he's 16 years old.
So I guess that might be calculated according to the way they're calculated in India, so it might be 17.
Yeah. Well, no, it would be his 17th birthday. See, it'd still be the 16th year, the end of the 15th year. But Prabhupada said when you calculate which birthday you are, you have, you calculate beginning with zero when you popped out of your mother. So it's interesting. It's just interesting. I find this difference sometimes in some of the books of the acharyas about 12 or 16. But I take it that Krishna was 16 just at the end of the 15th year. So otherwise there wouldn't be any time for his Kaishora pastimes. You know, and if you just say, well, in Kishore, that's Krishna and Radharani. If you just say, well, as soon as he reached the Kishore age, he just left, headed out of town. What happened with the Rasa dance?
Don't the Goswami give some reconciliatory arguments?
Like what are they?
He aged faster, so that he aged 16 years.
The Goswami gives us a vivid description of Krishna as a reservoir of pleasure. In his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, here are some parts of that description. And here's a further breakout of the ages. Krishna's Kaishora age can be divided into three parts. In the beginning of his Kaishora age, that is the beginning of his 11th year, the luster of his body becomes so bright that it becomes an impetus for ecstatic love. Similarly, there are reddish borders around his eyes and a growth of soft hairs on his body. In describing this early stage of his Kaishora age, Kundalata, one of the residents of Vrindavan, she's the cousin of Krishna actually, said to her friend, "My dear friend, I have just seen an extraordinary beauty appearing in the person of Krishna. His blackish bodily hue appears just like an Indranila jewel. There are reddish signs on his eyes and small soft hairs are coming out of his body. This appearance of these symptoms has made him extraordinarily beautiful." In this connection, in the 10th canto, 21st chapter, 5th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami tells King Parikshit, "My dear king, I shall try to describe how the minds of the gopis became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. The gopis would meditate on Krishna's dressing himself just like a dancing actor and entering the forest of Vrindavan, marking the ground with his footprints. They meditated on Krishna's having a helmet with a peacock feather and wearing earrings on his ears in yellow gold colored garments covered with jewels and pearls. They also meditated on Krishna's blowing his flute and on all the cowherd boys singing of the glories of the Lord. That is the description of the meditation which the gopis used to perform. Sometimes the gopis would think about his soft nails, his moving eyebrows, and his teeth, which were katechu colored from chewing pan. What's that? One description was given by a gopi to her friend. "My dear friend, just see how the enemy of Agha has assumed such wonderful features. His brows are just like the brows of Cupid, and they are moving just as though they were dancing. The tips of his nails are so soft, it is as if they were dried bamboo leaves. His teeth are reddish, and so it appears that he has assumed a feature of anger. Under the circumstances, where's the chance for a young girl not to be attracted by such beautiful features and not to be afraid of becoming a victim to such beauty?" Going somewhere? Free. Actually, I got to put together what I'm supposed to offer.
So we'll just wait.
Yeah, let me put one container. It takes 1 second. Excuse me. So Krishna's attractive features are also described by Vrinda, the gopi named after the gopi after whom Vrindavan was named. She told Krishna, "My dear Madhava, your newly invented smile has so captivated the hearts of the gopis that they are simply unable to express themselves. As such, they have become bewildered and will not talk with others. All these gopis have become so affected that it is as if they had offered 3 sprinkles of water upon their lives." That means dead. In other words, they have given up all hope for their living condition. According to the Indian system, when a person is dead, there's a sprinkling of water on the body. Thus, this statement of Vrinda shows that the gopis were so enchanted by the beauty of Krishna that because they could not express their minds, they decided to commit suicide. Wow. When Krishna arrived at the age of 13 to 14 years, his two arms and chest assumed an unspeakable beauty, and his whole form became simply enchanting. When Krishna attained 13 years of age, his two arms were challenging the trunks of elephants, his rising chest was trying to come to peace with doors of jewels, and his two arms were minimizing the value of bolts found on doors. Who could describe the wonderful beauty of these features of Krishna? The special beauty of Krishna's body was his mild smiling, his restless eyes, and his world-enchanting songs. These are the special features of this age. There's the statement in this connection that Krishna, on arriving at this age, manifested such beautiful bodily features that his restless eyes became the playthings of Cupid, and his mild smile resembled the newly grown lotus flower. The enchanting vibration of his songs became a great impediment to the young girls, who were supposed to remain chaste and faithful to their husbands. At this age, Krishna enjoyed the Rasa Leela, exhibiting his power of joking with the coward girls and enjoying their company in the bushes of the gardens by the bank of the Yamuna. In this connection, there is the following statement. Throughout the whole tract of land known as Vrindavan, there were the footprints of Krishna and the gopis. In some places, peacock feathers were strewn about. In some places, there were nice beddings in the bushes of the Vrindavan gardens. And in some places, there were piles of dust due to the group dancing of Govinda and the gopis. These are some of the features which are due to the different pastimes invented by Krishna in the place known as Vrindavan. There's the following statement by one gopi describing Krishna's attractive feature during this age. "My dear friend, just see how all of a sudden in the sky of Krishna there's a powerful rising sun, and how this rising sun is minimizing the rays of the chastity moon. Our attraction for Krishna is so intense that it is drying up the lotus flower of our discrimination, and we are losing our senses in deciding whether we shall be continuous chaste women or be victimized by the beauty of Krishna. My dear friend, I think that we have lost all hope of life." In the Kaishora age, beginning from the 11th year and continuing up to the end of the 15th year, Krishna's arms, legs, and thighs become marked with three divisional lines. At that time, Krishna's chest challenged a hill of Marakata jewels. His arms challenged the pillars of the Indranila jewel, the three lines of his waist challenged the waves of the river Yamuna, and his thighs challenged beautiful bananas. One gopi said, "With all these exquisite features of his body, Krishna is too extraordinarily beautiful, and therefore I am always thinking to protect him. And I'm sorry, we're always thinking of him to protect me, because he is the killer of all demons." The idea expressed in this statement is that the gopis were comparing their attraction for Krishna to an attack by demons. And to counteract their attraction for the beauty of Krishna, they were also turning to Krishna, hopefully, because he's the killer of all kinds of demons. In other words, they were perplexed, because on one hand, they were attracted by the beauty of Krishna, and on the other hand, they needed Krishna to drive away such a demon of attraction. This Kaishora age can be translated as adolescence. At the end of this period, all the gopis said, "Krishna is the killer of the attraction of Cupid, and as such he disturbs the patience of all newly married girls. Krishna's bodily features have become so exquisite, it is as if they were all manifesting an artistic sense of the highest sort. His dancing eyes have dimmed the brilliance of the most expert dancer, and so there is no Learned scholars therefore describe the features of his body at this time as Nava Yovana, newly invented youthfulness. At this stage of Krishna's bodily features, the conjugal love affairs with the gopis and similar pastimes become very prominent. There are six features of conjugal love affairs called peacemaking. Going to meet one. Such perfect bodily features of Krishna are described as follows. "My dear enemy of Kamsa, your two broad eyes, your rising chest, your two pillar-like arms, and the thin middle portion of your body are always enchanting to every lotus-eyed beautiful girl. The ornaments on the body of Krishna were not actually enhancing his beauty, but just the reverse. The ornaments were as well as toward killing the demons in the forest of Vrindavana. While Krishna was engaged in enjoyment with the boys and girls within the forest of Vrindavan, Kamsa used to send his associates to kill him, and Krishna would show his prowess by killing them. Generally, there are four kinds of garments on the body of Krishna. his shirt, turban, belt, and wearing garments. In Vrindavan, he used to put on reddish garments with a golden shirt on his body and an orange-colored turban on his head. The different kinds of belts, combined with his enchanting smile, used to be the transcendental bliss of his associates. This dress of Krishna is described as gorgeous, as a baby elephant is sometimes dressed in colorful clothing. So Krishna's gorgeousness was manifested by decoration with such colorful clothing on the different parts of his body. Akalpa refers to the texture of Krishna's hair. His nicely dressed body anointed with sandalwood pulp and decorated with flower garland differently at different times. As for the ointment on his body, the pulp of sandalwood generally appeared to be white, and when it was mixed with saffron dye, it appeared to be yellow. Krishna used to put a Vijayanti garland around his neck. This Vijayanti garland is made of at least 5 differently colored flowers. The length of such a garland was always touching Krishna's knees or feet. Besides this garland of flowers, there were other kinds of flower garlands too, sometimes decorating his head, sometimes hanging around his neck and chest, artistic painting with sandalwood pulp, and colored sandalwood were also found on the body of Krishna. One gopi addressed her friend and began to praise the bodily features of Krishna. She praised his blackish complexion, the reddish color of chewing pan, enhancing his beauty hundreds of times, the curling hair on his head, the kumkum red spots on his body, and his helmet, his earrings, his necklace, his 4 garments, the bangles on his head, the rings on his fingers, his ankle bells, and his flute. These are the different features of Krishna's ornaments. Krishna, the enemy of Aga, always looked beautiful with his incomparable helmet, his earrings made of diamonds, his necklace of pearls, his bangles, embroidered garments, and the beautiful rings on his fingers. More than 6 inches, that's bigger than that, 6 inches. 6 inches long, with 6 holes for whistling. Murali is about 18 inches long, with a hole at the end and 4 holes on the body of the flute. This kind of flute produces a very enchanting sound. The Vamsi flute is about 15 inches long, with 9 holes on the body. It's occasionally when they were needed. The poisonous effect. She drank the milk produced by the buffalo horn in the hand of Krishna. But instead of decreasing the poisonous effect, it increased it 1,000 times. The gopi was thus put into the most miserable poison condition. A certain gopi once stated to her friend, "My dear friend, when I heard the sound of the leg bells of Sri Krishna..." So where did he find the sound?
He went to Yamaloka.
And then he got the sun back. That's the best guru dakshin. The best guru dakshin. So Krishna also rescued his father from the sea one time. What happened was that story? What?
Varunadeva's servants arrested.
Yeah, why did they arrest him?
Because he went.
Printed upon the dust of the land. The gopis became overwhelmed simply by seeing these marks on the ground. One devotee has exclaimed, "Oh, I have not yet visited the wonderful places where the pastimes of the Lord were performed, but simply by hearing the name of Mathura, I have become overwhelmed with joy." Krishna is very fond of tulasi leaves and buds, because tulasi buds are usually offered at the lotus feet. Both of you were joyfully smiling. When I saw the two of you standing in the distance, my eyes at once became overflooded with tears. We'll just read a little more and then we'll take questions. We're almost finished with the chapter. There are many statements about the festive days in connection with Krishna's different activities. One of these festive days is Janmashtami, the day of Krishna's birth. This Janmashtami day is the most opulent festival day for the devotees, and it is still observed with great pomp. Those who are move, become inanimate. And the inanimate become animate. In other words, like the rocks start to flow. There's an interesting story about Narada Muni and Hanuman. I don't know if anyone was, you hear me tell the story? You heard me tell the story. Well, you've heard everything. Then once upon a time, Hanuman wanted to take some music lessons. So he wanted to go to Narada Muni to take music lessons. So he said, Narada Muni, give me some music lessons. And Narada Muni gave him, started to run away, and then he ran all over his house, or wherever he was living. And he was laughing because he wanted Narada Muni to leave the dust of his lotus feet everywhere in the house. And then he came back and he freed the Veena. That's a nice story. So anyway, so it's described, yes, that everyone heard Krishna's flute. People became stunned. But they had different relationships with Krishna. It's not that the trees wanted to become his gopis or something like that. It depends on the relationship. You understand? Some people have, you know, some devotees have relationship conjugal love. Some devotees have the relationship of servitude. Some are just shantaras. And some parental. You know, just like, or not, just let's say a musician and his mother's, which is not good. Here's a deity carved in the city. I said, how'd you get it? Well, we pulled off a limb of it, you know, or something like that. So, and I found one of my friends had a from one of the temples. You know, several hundred year old door. He had my door in his house. I said, how'd you get it? I said, I just did it. So, you know, we should be very careful around the holy places, not desecrate them. Well, oh, she's taking pictures for my thought of the day. She's in charge of my thought of the day. So these are things to, you know, there's different scriptures of Krishna. I think it's much more than just like psychology, because then you have the rasas described, and then the combinations, you know, of the rasas, proper and improper combinations of the rasas. I think it's a lot more. You do have some psychology there. Like, this is definitely psychology. Right here. The most, yeah, I can say a lot. And there's psychology there, too. What's that?
The modern mood is to reduce all ontology to psychology.
Yeah, it's just tissue belief. Yeah, that's postmodern. Mm-hmm. That's postmodern. Nothing is real, strawberry fields forever. That's postmodern understanding, you know. There's no absolutes. But actually that statement, as you know, is an absolute statement. So they're very, you know, they contradict themselves. There are no absolutes. Well, what about that? You know, it's just like Prabhupada talks about the Mayavadis.